Welcome to The Price of Football, the podcast that follows the money behind the beautiful game. This is Monday, so it's a questions special. I'm Kevin Day, and I'm joined by Kieran Maguire, the Baron, the Professor, the Guru, whatever you want to call him, the football finance expert.
Well, football finance is fucking Rain Man, according to one owner of a championship club.
I'm happy with that. Which owner of the championship club was it?
I'd rather not say.
Okay, so you're happy with the fucking Rain Man bit, but yeah. Great. This is 2020. If this was Sky, I'd be saying I'm sorry if you picked up on some bad language there, which annoys me. It really annoys us. 40,000 people in the football ground. You're watching football. No one's going to be offended.
No.
It's like when they apologise when there's a mass riot, when there's a 20 player fight, they go, oh, no one wants to see scenes like this. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
I want to know why the keeper's not joining in. You don't see enough of them. So coming up on this special questions one, how much is the Europa League worth? Why some clubs post abbreviated accounts? And Kieran's eyes just twinkled on the very mention of abbreviated accounts. And just how many clubs can you play for a season? Now, our first question comes from Jace Williams. Hello, Jace. We sort of touched on this before, but I think we've never fully answered it properly. If the owner of a club wants to invest in his club, his own club, why does it show up on a balance sheet as a loan instead of just an injection of money? Because it's not really investment if the club has to pay it back, is it? Because you've talked recently about Watford, their owners may be asking for money back.
Yep, there are two ways of investing money into a football club. First of all, there is the club issues shares. And the nature of a share is that you give the club money, it gives you a piece of paper, and the club never has to pay that money back. So the only way I can get the money back as a shareholder is if I sell it to somebody else.
Yes, but there's nothing to stop you selling it, is it?
There's nothing to stop me unless there is something called preemption rights, where it's in the club's constitution that if I want to sell the share, I've got to either offer it back to the club or to offer it normally to one of the other directors or shareholders. So you couldn't sell if you owned 100 shares in Palace, you couldn't sell them to me. And I go, I'm going to sell them to my mate Big Dave.
Right. Have you got a mate called Big Dave?
I have got a mate called Big Dave. Yeah, he's an ex-Marine. He is my hero because he was at Falklands.
Oh, really?
And you know, the stories he's told are quite harrowing.
That's for another pod. You never know with nicknames because the chances are Big Dave is 5'2". You never know.
And called Steve.
If I had, we've talked about Donkey Head and Fireplace Jack on this pod before. If I have 100 shares in Palace that I've bought at £10 each, I can sell them to you at whatever price.
And that's between me and you.
Right.
But there could be a clause in Palace's constitution which says, if you want to sell the shares, you've got to give Steve Parish first option to buy them back from you. So that's fairly standard as far as football clubs are concerned.
Right.
So that money, that's one way of a club generating money from investors. The other way is for the owner to come in and loan the money, which of course loans have to be repaid. Now there's a lot of complications can take place after that. Sometimes the owners will be charging interest on the loans. So we've seen that. We were talking about West Ham recently, and I think one of the reasons why West Ham fans are unhappy with Golden Sullivan is that they've lent the club £45 million in loans, but they've taken out £14 million in interest. Now, in the context of a football club, it's not a huge amount of money, but it still grates with the fan base to say, well, you know, we put money in for our season tickets every week or every year, and we get absolutely nothing back, and you're taking out money in the form of loan interest.
And as we talked about in the last pod, there are a traditional working class fan base who are still grumpy about moving to that giant corporate box, essentially. But why, to answer Jace's question, why do they have to be loans? Why can't an owner just say, why can't Usmanov, Everton, for example, just say, here's £20 million, I don't want it back?
He has effectively done that with his stadium naming rights. So there are ways of people putting the money in, and we're seeing that through sponsorship. So, for example, the guy that owns Scunthorpe, his sponsorship deal is with a nightclub that he owns in Blackpool.
Yes.
So there are ways of owners getting money into the club which are nothing to do with sort of traditional funding. The reason why the owner might want to put money in via a loan is that he might be saying to himself, well, in 5 or 10 years' time, I want to sell the club, and at that point, I want my money back, and I want to get the money back in the form of the loan. Or if I do sell the club in 5 or 10 years' time, I don't think it will be able to survive on its own, so I'm going to continue to have an investment, which hopefully will be interest-free, and it's a way that the club will survive if I'm not there. There's also the issue of tax, and there are tax benefits in lending money to people, okay. which you know, far beyond sure. our remit.
Well, I mean, what if he doesn't want to sell the club, he just wants his money back? What does that happen? Because he's going to bankrupt his own club, isn't he?
Well, and there's no benefit to the club in doing right. so. What tends to happen is that you come to an arrangement with the club that the club will continue, but you'll only get a fraction. So if we take a look at what happened with Sunderland, with Ellis Short, yeah. and with Aston Villa, with Randy Lerner, they both lent around about £150 million to the club. They were two American guys. They didn't really know that much about football. That money was spent, stroke, wasted. And when they walked away, they said, give us 10p in the pound.
Oh, okay.
So you know, that, right. that could be a reason right. that they say, I'm prepared to lend money to the club. I don't expect to get it all back, but by putting it in the form of a loan, it allows them to have some form of credibility with themselves to say, well, you know, if I'd managed to sell it to Saudi billionaires, I'd have got it all back. Yeah. If sell it under distress, I'll just take a hit.
Right, okay. Well, as you know, Mondays is our special question pod. And the next question comes from Alan Pacitti. Hello, Alan. It says quick question on Rangers, so try and keep it quick. Rangers, I mean, 5 years ago, we were in a terrible, terrible financial situation, really poor. So basically his question is, are they recovering from that? Next 5 years, are they sustainable as a club?
Rangers' finances have improved to a degree.
Oh, only to a degree, okay.
To a degree. Certainly there is more money coming in. And I think what is critical to Rangers is that they must qualify for the Europa League group stages, ideally get out of those as they have done this season. And then they can start to make some money. If they could win the Scottish Premiership, and presently I think as we speak they're five points behind with two games in hand, that would give them the opportunity to go into the Champions League, and that could really change their finances around. At present, they have invested significantly on the pitch. They've invested significantly in Steven Gerrard, and therefore the directors are having to subsidise the club each year by lending further money. I think the directors have said, we are willing to do that. We can't carry on indefinitely, but you know, a couple of Champions League campaigns or success this season, further success in the Europa League, could mean that they'll break even or more. If you're comparing them to Celtic, what Celtic have been very clever at doing, first of all, they have had Champions League group stage contributions, which are huge compared to the Europa League, but Celtic have sold a player every summer, and that player has normally gone for 20 to 25 million pounds. So they sold Kieran Tierney this summer, it was Dembele the previous summer, and that sort of effectively built into their model. And I think they're actually fishing in a slightly different pool to Rangers when it comes to recruiting players. So they're buying players in the 3 to 5 million pound bracket and selling them for 15 to 20. Historically, Rangers haven't been paying the same amount of money, but they did sign one of the lads from Liverpool last summer for 8 million. So I think that they are feeling more confident. My view is that Rangers, it's not easy for them because they are competing against Celtic, but they're okay.
Well, that's Celtic and my Scottish club, so I'm glad they're okay. I would have been upset if they'd been brilliant, but okay, it's fine. I'm saying that because my Scottish family listened to this. If I hadn't acknowledged that Celtic was my Scottish club, I'd have been in big trouble. And if you think Big Dave's big. and those people listening in Scotland, by the way, I know we've been promising a Scottish football special. It's on the way. We're talking with the chief executive of the Scottish Premiership. I don't think it's fair to drag him down to South London. So we're looking to a date where we can do a proper studio in London. And Guy, who's sitting at home listening to this on his gold sofa, can stump up the money for that proper studio as well. Next question is Adam. Adam says hello to Kev and the Baron. Now, just a note, I don't like being called Kev, Adam. Kevin, ooh. I'll answer to it, but Kevin's fine. If you really want your question asked, the Baron, of course, loves being called the Baron. The Baron's glowing.
Well, I keep being called Kevin on BBC and TalkSport and Sky. I'm happy with that as well.
Yeah, oh, fine, okay. Well, you know, you wouldn't be if I called you Kev, would you? That's going to confuse everybody. Adam's a Wolves fan, it's a very good time to be a Wolves fan. His question's about the Europa League. Financially, how much is the Europa League going to make a difference for Wolves? If they're knocked out in the last 16, the quarterfinal, the semi-final, is it? It's nowhere near the Champions League, we know that. But for a club like them, does it make a difference?
I think it does. The way that UEFA distribute the money, 80% of the prize money goes to the Champions League, 20% goes to the Europa League. Mm-hmm. And then, I think, is it next season, the Europa Club Conference begins? Yeah. They've not revealed what proportion of the money is going into that. I suspect not a lot is going to be subtracted from the Champions League, though.
We talked about that at some length several pods ago, didn't we? Now, so I know you can archive those, but that was a very interesting conversation about this totally unnecessary and pointless new UEFA club. It's going to be very difficult not to be in Europe, essentially, for most clubs in the next couple of years, isn't it?
Very much so. So yeah, we're finishing ninth. All of a sudden, can we get very exciting? Insane, yeah. So how much money do you get? You get 3 million just from getting to the group stages. You get 570 grand for a win.
Okay.
Now, that's one win in the Europa League. You get 190,000 for a draw. Remember, you get 200,000 for winning the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
Okay. So the main reason financially for winning the Carabao Cup is it allows you into this type of additional money. If you take a look at what Wolves have done so far, they've got £3.5 million in prize money from their group games plus the 2.9. So they made about £6.5 million to date. And then if they get to the quarterfinals, it's another £1.5 million. If they win it, they get £8.5 million. Plus they get to play in the Super Cup. So this is all prize money. On top of that, of course, you've got gate receipts. So,
which are all extra, of course.
That's right.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
So looking at the accounts of Chelsea and Arsenal, who were winners, of course, and runners-up of the Europa Cup last season, or the Europa League, Chelsea made just under 40 million and Arsenal's was around about 35, 36. So it's worth having. It's not the same as it's you'd be better off avoiding relegation than winning the Europa League, to put it into some form of context there.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
I'm quite glad Wolves are in Europe, because historically those series of friendlies they played back in the 50s against Real Madrid and Honved was what led to the creation of the European Cup in the first place. So they sort of deserve to be getting some money out of a tournament they had a big play in starting, didn't they?
That's right. And also, they're playing great football.
Yeah.
And as an away fan, it's one of the places you genuinely look forward to going to.
Well, there's a bypass, an underpass near one of the pubs I wouldn't recommend going to, but apart from that, it's a brilliant place to go.
Yeah, I was in that underpass in 1981 when we beat Wolves 1-0 on a Tuesday night, and I've never run so fast in my life. That was old school naughtiness.
I was at Wolves with Steve Ball once, which is fascinating. Wow. That was a brilliant experience.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of this pointless nostalgia. You can wait for our books for that. Harry Wood is a Barnsley fan. Now, this is a question I know is right up your street. We've had a couple that are pure accounting questions, and this is a pure accounting question. So I will ask it, and I'll mentally switch off. I'll wait for your lips to stop moving, and I'll get back in the room if that's okay. Now, I think it comes from a link that I think you published. Is it profit and loss before tax? But Barnsley posted a figure that was profit and loss after tax, due to the fact that they posted these in what are called abbreviated accounts. Now, before I drift off, Harry wants to know whether these abbreviated accounts are dodgy or common practice.
First of all, they're common practice. If you've got a company that you provide your services through, that will produce abbreviated accounts. What happens is that if you employ less than 50 people, and if you have turnover of less than £12.6 million and certain value for your assets less than £6.5 million, you don't have to produce the full amount of information.
Does Barnsley fit that remit?
Barnsley does.
They've got less than 50...
Well, you've got to satisfy two out of three of those.
Oh, okay, so it does. Right, okay.
And what this means is that all of your profit and loss information, which is your revenue, your wage bill, your tax bill, how much interest you're paying on loans, all of that information is not shown in the accounts. So the clubs in the Premier League and the Championship, they are all above that threshold. So therefore, as you know, when a new set of accounts comes out, I get very, very excited by that.
I do.
I get less excited when clubs produce these abbreviated accounts. Now, this means that there's less transparency.
It's the difference between softcore and hardcore porn for you, basically, isn't it?
I wouldn't know anything about that.
You run a... Yeah, never mind. Yes.
The difference is in the football industry is that a football industry is not the same as a company that makes plastic boxes or washing machine repair parts. Football club, as far as we're concerned, as far as most Cat fans are concerned, it is the beating heart of the local community. It's part of your identity. All these things which we football romantics hold very closely to our heart.
It should be all those things, yes.
And therefore, the argument goes is that it should be a protected business and it should have greater transparency and communications and better governance. Now, the Football Supporters Federation, they've said they've lobbied the EFL and they've also lobbied government to say that football clubs therefore should not be able to produce these abbreviated accounts because it will allow the fans to see with greater transparency exactly what the clubs are up to. The club owners, of course, turn around and say, "Well, none of that. You know, we like being clandestine." So there's an on pass at present. I can identify how much profit a club has made from looking at the balance sheet. But it's no detail. So it's not dodgy. It is common. It is frustrating because it reduces comparability and governance and transparency.
And I'm back in the room. Now, our last question. it's a very good answer. I mean, because I think you would always worry when you see your club involved with words. Even if you know nothing about these things, they don't. Your first thought is this right? Are other clubs doing it? So it's a very good question. Now, Chris Whiffin, our last question. Remember a couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of fuss about Owen Doyle. He's scoring a lot of goals for Swindon, owned or registered by Bradford. But it's focused attention on the rule that you can only play for two clubs per season. And Chris wants to know why that rule is there, and financially, is it a good idea? And also, I guess, is it not restricting a player's ability to work where he wants?
It is restricting a player's ability to play where he wants. The reason for it is to stop four matches from the end of the season, a club who's got a bit of money recruiting Wayne Rooney, recruiting Harry Kane, and so on. Just you could do that for players on a short-term basis. It would make a mockery of end-of-season negotiations and end-of-season matches.
There's a transfer window. How would they be able to do that anyway?
Well, what you could have is a player at the start of the season is registered and plays a couple of games for one club. He then goes... It's more difficult now in the Premier League window because that coincides with the start of the season.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, at the end of August, you could play half a dozen games. Yeah. You then go out on loan to one club. You go out on you come back at the start of January. You play a couple of games for yet a third club, and then you go out on a fourth loan deal, and you just become a gun for hire. And I think in terms of the integrity of the game, and let's face it, there's not a lot of it left, I think it's one of the few things which is a positive.
So this rule is less to do with finances and more to do with integrity?
Yeah, absolutely nothing to do with finance. I think from a host club's point of view, they'd quite happily hire out one of their best reserve strikers on a match-by-match basis to whoever was the highest bidder.
Well, we don't often end to get to end this pod with the word integrity, so let's do that. That's fantastic. Thank you for all your questions. Our Monday pod is driven by them, so please keep sending them in to @priceoffootball.com. There is a bit of a queue, but we will get to your questions. And sometimes Kieran will even answer them on social media, depending on what sort of mood he's in. Normally, it ranges from bad to furious, Kieran's mood in general. But when he's in one of his affable moods, he might answer one of your questions. He has to on this because we're hoping to monetize it. So what you get is good, Kieran.
Oh, right. I think after Guy's worked out how much our share is, I think you're in for a bit of a shock there.
We all know he's too busy on his gold bed under his duvet made of notes. This is an Adaptit production. Thank you very much for listening. I've been told off several times for saying we'll see you soon because, of course, we won't. We're never going to get to see you until such time as we do a live one, which we're not going to do until Guy pays us for the ones we've been doing anyway. And we'll see you on Thursday.
Cheerio, folks.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.